Here's what's coming up in the Category 5.TV newsroom. The U.S. Interior Department is grounding its entire drone fleet for fear it could be used against them. Google is buying Fitbit and promises that they will not exploit all that health data to serve ads. Microsoft Edge is coming to Linux. The late James Dean is getting digitally restored for an upcoming movie. And many on the internet, including Chris Evans, aren't happy. Stick around, the full details are coming up later in the show.
This is the Category 5.TV newsroom, covering the week's top tech stories with a slight Linux bias.
Rickman joined this week by Robbie Ferguson.
Some quick honorable mentions this week, Sasha. SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket deployed 60 Starlink satellites into Earth's orbit this week. That was just Monday. Did you? I don't know if you at home caught the video. I was watching live, and it was astonishing.
Oh, I bet.
To think that an independent company has sent a shuttle, basically, up into the Earth's orbit and released 60 satellites. So what does that mean? Well, 60 satellites. Okay, well, why do we need more satellites? What they're doing is creating the Starlink technology. So now, I believe, my theory is that Elon Musk, who plans to go to Mars, is going to be uplinking our internet service here on Earth with Mars. I think that's a very distinct possibility.
That's
otherwise
plausible.
Why is he so keen on getting satellites into the Earth's orbit that are the internet? However, our immediate acknowledgement of what he's doing is we still rely so much on cable.
Yes.
And I mean wires. I mean like the big honking wire that's under the ocean that brings the internet across the ocean. Like, we're still so heavily reliant on that. So what would happen in a world where we were no longer reliant on that? If a natural disaster happened, let's say a hurricane, right?
Yes.
That would typically take out infrastructure. So we lose our phone, we lose our internet, we're no longer able to communicate with family, we're no longer able to let people know that we're safe, nor are we able to find out what's happening next.
Yes.
Is there a change in the weather? Is there a turn in this?
Is there a place we should meet?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm using a natural disaster as a simple but effective example. So now imagine if that internet provision, which internet provides voice over IP phone service, it provides our news, our weather forecasting, and our communication. With internet these days, we have everything that we need as far as communication goes.
I would agree.
Yeah. So imagine if it was not susceptible to land-based natural disaster or war,
right,
or famine or third world, like the inability to create infrastructure within the third world because of simple financial reasons. Right? So you think about those kinds of things and you think, okay, well, let's put a whole bunch of satellites up into orbit and now we're no longer susceptible to those things. So now when natural disaster strikes, everyone still has communication within that zone. When the third world countries need access to high-speed internet for education, they have that. So that's the immediate thing that's happening here with Starlink, and that is now underway. And there are other things, like I mentioned, independent. Like, this is not NASA.
Be on Mars.
Yes. But immediately, this is not NASA. This is not government funded. This is not a government of the world that has come and said, okay, we're going to send something up into space. No, this is an independent company. And whatever you believe about Elon Musk, I think he's a genius. He's a brilliant man. And he's doing something that has never been done before. And we're about to see some shift in the technology. We're about to see a shift in how things work around here. And certainly, I think he's planning for the future. And when I say Mars, I'm thinking, we know that that's his long-term endgame.
Yeah.
Elon Musk. And if that's his long-term endgame, well, why is he putting satellites into the Earth's orbit that have internet access? And is that going to allow communication with Mars? which is mind-bending to me. That's sci-fi, and yet this is actually happening right now. Also, in our honorable mentions, Google is attempting to combat the growing Play Store malware issue, and they've actually formed an App Defense Alliance, which brings technology from ESET, Lookout, and Zimperium to the Play Store. So you might have actually noticed that now, when you install an app on Android, it gets scanned first.
Yes.
So Android or Google has said, okay, well, that's not our specialty, the malware thing. ESET's already doing a fantastic job of this. So let's work with ESET. Let's allow ESET to create something for our app store. And we're working with these other companies through this alliance as well. And so it's going to reduce the amount of malware because it's scanning everything that goes into our phones through the app store. And yes, I think it's a good thing. It's a very good thing.
I agree. That is a good thing. It's preventative measure, right?
It really is. But it's also, these are third parties. So these are not Google.
Mm-hmm.
They're aligned with Google, which is good for them. But there are those who are afraid of, or I shouldn't use the word afraid.
Really?
Who are a little bit on edge about monopolization.
Right.
There are the big three.
Yes.
And Google is one of them. And you know, if there's so much power, so if Google has all control.
Yeah, you can't say buy this from Google and Google says that it's safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or,
so now
like,
we've got third parties that are involved.
Yeah.
And third parties that are saying, yes, this is safe.
It feels better.
Yeah.
Even if those third parties like,
I think it's definitely a good step. It's definitely a good step. But it's also a little bit funny because, you know, the malware problem is like, so they're taking a different approach to Microsoft. Microsoft has said, oh, well, we'll just create a antivirus within our operating system that's garbage, by the way. But we'll put it in there. And Google is saying, no, that's not our specialty. We're going to let the pros do this and we're going to let them take care of the malware issue. It's an interesting case.
Yes.
And finally, in our honorable mentions this week, NASA scientists opened an untouched rock and oil sample from the moon that was returned to Earth on Apollo 17. That marks the first time in more than 40 years that a pristine sample from the Apollo era has been opened. And what's really, really cool about this, Sasha, is that we've seen pictures of the X-ray data from 40 years ago of those samples.
Right.
And it's like blurry. And now they've shown X-ray photos that are AI enhanced and machine learning enhanced through current 2019 technology. And it's absolutely mind-blowing how the technology has shifted our ability to look at these samples. And just goes to show, like, hey, that was a good move on NASA's part.
Yes.
To be able to, you know, set those samples aside and wait for the technology.
Until we had the technology to actually
exactly.
do the, like, the soil sample and the...
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into the top stories we're following this week.
Okay.
The U.S. Interior Department is grounding its entire drone fleet for fear it could be used against them. Overseas Federal Land and Resource Management says it's grounding its entire aerial drone fleet of more than 800 UAVs out of concern for Chinese spying and drone-aided cyber attacks. Every drone in use by the Interior Department is either manufactured in China or uses some Chinese-made parts. Interior Security David Bernhardt made the order 2 weeks ago, and the drones will remain grounded until the department completes a review of the security risks they may pose. Many of the drones are currently used by the department to help with combating forest fires, monitoring dams and floods, inspecting land for property and environmental damage due to erosion, and monitoring endangered species. Some of the concern is centered on whether the drones could be used to transmit data, including photography and video, of sensitive U.S. infrastructure that may be the subject of future cyber attacks. The move is the U.S. government's latest escalation in its push to punish Chinese companies for years of alleged trade secret theft, despite the U.S. purchasing billions of dollars in products and equipment from Chinese firms every year. U.S. lawmakers last month introduced a bill that would prevent federal agencies from purchasing drones from China, something that could greatly impact Chinese drone giant DJI's business. Federal agencies have warned against using DJI products in the past, but the company has never faced an outright ban. A spokesperson for DJI said, quote, "As the leader in commercial drone technology, we have worked with the Department of Interior to create a safe and secure drone solution that meets their rigorous requirements, which was developed over the course of 15 months with DOI officials, independent cybersecurity professionals, and experts at NASA. We will continue to support the Department of Interior and provide assistance as it reviews its drone fleet so the agency can quickly resume the use of drones to help federal workers conduct vital operations."
Oh,
end
my.
Quote. So.
I hope that the decision to ground the fleet is based upon
security and not politics?
Information, we'll say. Because if it's based on politics, and we try not to get into politics here.
Here's what I will say.
Okay.
People love to use drones. People need to use drones now. We have come accustomed to them. We want to
consumers, you mean?
Consumers and industries. I mean, I even just heard in the news today that our local community wants to use drone defibrillators.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So for immediate...
So smart.
Yeah. So drones have become a part of our everyday life.
Can I just inject here?
Yes.
Drones, we're using the term drones, and that's what's in the news story. We're talking quadcopters and hexacopters. We're not talking military units. We're talking devices that are designed to assist.
And we're leaning into that technology. We're not leaning away from it. So if the U.S. wants to stop using amazing DJI drones, they've got to come up with a solution that's better.
American made.
Right? Because the truth of the matter is they make really good products.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to want to dial it back.
Yeah.
They're so good that you almost look past the iffiness of some of it, right?
But like, is there iffiness? I mean, it sounds to me as though DJI has done their due diligence.
Yeah.
They've worked with the military.
Exactly.
They've worked with the government. They've worked with cybersecurity professionals in order to develop the technology that is in use.
Yeah. I would say that they're doing their part. So why not?
That's how it feels. And I say that with reluctance because there's always the chance, right? But come on. Mm-hmm. The American government has the power, the manpower, the smarts to reverse engineer firmwares.
Yes.
They can look at what packets are being sent and transmitted. Mm-hmm. But realistically, we're talking about devices that are designed to assist.
Exactly.
As you mentioned, defibrillation.
Yeah.
I can get a defibrillator to you in minutes rather than having to get it there on an ambulance.
Right.
When you're in the middle, like we're here in Canada, so when you're in the middle of Algonquin Park.
Exactly.
Think about how horrendous it would be if your spouse went into cardiac arrest.
Exactly. If they can drone in a defibrillator, I can keep them alive until paramedics or help comes.
Right.
Right? Minutes versus the worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to discredit that. Okay, so if there is intelligence that says these particular drones that are saving lives are spying on you and sharing the location of the defibrillation unit with the Chinese government because they care, right? They want to... Come on. Realistically, like, why? Why does the Chinese government care that you are putting out a fire in this particular area? Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me, realistically. Again, if there's intelligence, then let me know. But
I know we don't know the ins and outs. It just seems a little bit strange play. I'll just leave it at that.
It seems like trade wars.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
That's opinion. I know. I'm sorry.
It does. Yeah, I would like real solid proof that DJI is doing something untoward.
Sure.
I and I have not yet seen it.
We've yet to see proof that DJI, and we've heard this in the news, and as you mentioned, DJI has, they've warned against the use of DJI technology. Not because there's anything wrong with them, but because they're Chinese. What the heck?
Yeah. Since when? Like, since when
I'm
can
I'm not
going to
comment on that. We stay away from politics. I'll tell you since when, Sasha.
It just drives me bananas. I do know. Let's just move along.
Let's move along.
Google is buying Fitbit and promises that they will not exploit all that health data to serve ads. Google will pay $2.1 billion to acquire Fitbit, the second largest company in the wearables market, inserting itself into a world increasingly dominated by Apple and continuing the mass consolidation of consumer technology by the big three corporations, Amazon being the third party. Offering $7.35 a share, Google was prepared to pay a 70% premium to take control of the company, although the overall valuation is not even twice Fitbit's annual revenue, serving to illustrate the company's recent struggles. It is Google's fifth largest acquisition, more than it paid for YouTube or Waze back in the day, and it illustrates two things. First, that Google is increasingly focused on hardware following its Nest and Motorola acquisitions. And second, that wherever Apple or Amazon go, Google follows. Google's efforts to repeat its approach to the mobile phone market with Wear OS took a hit last year when Huawei ditched it in favor of its own homegrown operating system. Google clearly decided that it needed to control some hardware in the market and so guarantee a foothold, and a $2 billion acquisition of Fitbit was the answer. The biggest concern about the acquisition, given Google's business model, is what the web giant will now do with the vast amounts of personal data it will now acquire. Senior VP of Devices and Services Rick Osterlund addressed this point, saying, "When you use our products, you're trusting Google with your information. We understand this is a big responsibility, and we work hard to protect your information, put you in control, and give you transparency about your data," end quote. He goes on to clarify, quote, "Similar to our other products, with wearables, we will be transparent about the data we collect and why. We will never sell personal information to anyone. Fitbit health and wellness data will not be used for Google Ads, and we will give Fitbit users the choice to review, move, or delete their data," end quote. Fitbit customers have been complaining for years about the declining quality of its products and software, so Google's inevitable migration to its system will probably result in a better user experience over time. Looking at the bigger picture, however, the acquisition of Fitbit will only add to arguments by governments and regulators that the big three, Google, Apple, and Amazon, have too much power and are reducing competition across a whole range of markets.
Yeah. And I think data is the currency these days.
Right.
That's really, really true.
And do you know how much data is Fitbit has on
Do you
me?
Know?
I
what
do
you,
know.
What are you wearing
I
on your
wear
wrist?
A Fitbit.
Look at this.
There is nothing.
She's got a Google device on her wrist.
So here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I love Fitbit.
Yes.
I also actually love Google.
Independently of one another?
Independently.
What if they were amalgamated?
I don't love them to be able to marry together data points about me that I would like to keep separate.
Okay.
And I think that they'll now have that, right?
Well, they now know your heart rate.
They'll know my heart rate and my location.
Yes.
They know
where you shop.
They know where I shop. They even know what I weigh.
They do anyways. Like you've got an Android phone, so they know where you are.
Yeah.
Which works fantastically. This is why a Starbucks opened up on my route to work.
Right.
Because they knew where I travel.
Fitbit knows health things about me.
Sure.
And I'm okay with that. Google doesn't know health things about me.
Mm.
Right? Like, okay. Google doesn't know how I sleep at night. Fitbit does.
Oh.
Fitbit knows exactly how well I've slept
at night. That's interesting.
Right? Google might find out that I am more apt to buy something when I've had less than 7 hours of sleep.
Sure.
And then they say that they're not going to push
They
us.
Say that.
They can say that.
They're not idiots, though.
No.
They'll find a way.
If I were Google, I would say that, too.
Yeah. Of course they'd say that.
Because the truth of the matter is...
But there has to be truth
now,
in it.
Now, like, I weigh myself daily on my Fitbit scale.
Okay.
If my weight goes up, Google's now going to send me something.
New jeans?
Probably. Right? Like, everything.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm not sure about this whole Fitbit and Google marriage, even though I love both of them. Mm-hmm. I don't know which one I need to break up with.
Even in our chat room, Noman5 is having trouble with this whole marriage of Google and Fitbit, saying that he's thinking about stopping using his Fitbit just because of this.
And I, see, at first, when I first heard this story, and it was DJ Wheels that sent it to me first.
Okay.
When I first heard the story, I was excited.
Oh, yes?
Because I love both of them. But then I kind of like let it marinate a little bit inside my head. And I thought, no, I don't want, like, Fitbit knows details about my health. Like, they know my what I eat, my liquid input, mostly because I add that in, but...
Drinking a water.
Exactly. But they know, sleep, but Google knows my driving habits because I have Google Maps.
Well, now it's all consolidated together.
What if I don't sleep well and then I get into a car accident?
Right.
Right?
They're going to know that.
Yeah.
The government is involved.
Whoa. What if my insurance finds out?
They will, because Google's going to buy your insurance company.
Yeah.
You watch, because they're just buying up companies like this.
Like it gets complicated when you start thinking, okay, well, now am I going to be declined something that I want, like, say, some sort of critical illness insurance, because now they can see that I don't eat right or sleep well, or I do all of those very well. But this is it. This is hypothetical. Or, you know, if my BMI has been increasing or my heart rate's a little off the charts.
It's an interesting thought, and it really sounds sci-fi to me.
Yeah.
But we're seeing it take place. Like, we're at that early stage of this.
Right. But then at the same time, it's kind of cool to think that they would be able to monitor the heart rate of everybody in a traffic jam.
And it makes absolutely sense as an acquisition.
Oh,
Google needed to make this move. And Fitbit needed it.
Fitbit has been not fabulous.
And I'll just say that Fitbit was on its way down. So Fitbit will have gone out of business.
Yes.
So if you love Fitbit, if you use your Fitbit device, well, think of it this way. Google saved it. So your device is going to keep working thanks to Google.
Yes.
Plain and simple.
I'm just having a really hard time with it. It feels very...
I think what you're going to have to do, Sasha, and viewers who use Fitbit, is keep an eye on the changes in the privacy terms. Keep an eye on the terms and service. Keep an eye on changes in the rights that they have access to your data and what they're allowed to use that data for. Right. Because as they've said, so there's clever wording here, and think about that, and you're not going to hear this on traditional news media, but there's clever wording here when they're saying, we are not going to use your data for this and that and
they're
advertising.
We're not going to use it for ads. But
no, we're not.
There's a ton of other things they could use it for.
But we're going to collect that data.
Yeah.
So remember, they're collecting it. Yeah. They're holding on to it. It is part of the data, the data set that is you. And then as those terms and conditions change 5 years from now, when people forget about the acquisition and just trust that this thing is working, if they don't read those terms and conditions, now all of a sudden, well, I am getting new gene advertising. Mm-hmm. Or I am getting some skewed results when I Google things.
Yeah, or how integrated might it become with the medical industry? And I say that because Fitbit recently sent me a little push notification. Did you know that you can print yourself a report to take to your doctor that shows
See, that's cool,
you,
though. That's neat.
So I did it. I didn't print it. I PDF printed it, but... Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I thought, wow, I don't have any need to go to the doctor right now. But if I did, I would bring this. And it shows tracking of your highs and your lows of every marker and your
How'd you sleep
trend.
Last night? Well, here you go. Check out my report.
Exactly. This is the worst sleep I've ever had, the best sleep I've ever had, and here's the average. Mm-hmm. I love it. But at what point does the doctor automatically get that as opposed to me sharing it? Right? And then the doctor says to me, calls me up and says, you need to come in because I've noticed that your heart rate's off the charts. I haven't noticed that. AI has told me.
Hey, Robbie, your BMI is really high.
Yeah. I was dinged that your heart rate is kind of crazy right now.
Too much alcohol in your system.
Yeah. It's a little bit like Minority Report or something
to
me.
It can get that way.
Yeah. We've got to take a quick break. The Crypto Report and more of this week's top tech stories are coming up. Don't go anywhere.
The Category 5.tv newsroom, and looking at the crypto market, Sasha, and how things have changed over the past week as far as the Category 5 crypto report goes. So you can find that at category5.tv/crypto report. Things have not really changed a lot. However, Bitcoin has lost a fair bit, losing over $500. It's down at $8,778.71 US dollars. That's the value of a single Bitcoin. We're still looking for Libra, but it's not trading yet. We've got Litecoin also losing $1.61. It's at $61.45. We've got the Ethereum coin, which is the only coin that we are currently tracking that gained this week.
Okay.
Gaining just a little bit. It's up at $186.20. Monero is at $62.89, pretty much on par with where it was last week. Scala is at 0.29 ten-thousandths of a cent. And Turtlecoin, interestingly, about midweek last week, we saw it starting to spike. We saw it starting to climb. And I was like, what is happening? Are we finally going to the moon? And then it dropped back down.
That's the thing with the crypto report is that I wonder what happens from week to week, because like Bitcoin or Turtlecoin could just be like kind of the same from 1 week to the next, because it is so crazy.
And those micro coins really can fluctuate. Yeah. So you can get really, really excited about the Turtlecoin, because like a fluctuation when you're talking about 0.1 of a cent could only be a 1 cent fluctuation.
Right.
But it's huge as far as graphs go, right? When you look at Bitcoin, which is hovering around $9,000 per coin, a 1 cent differential is not going to make a difference whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, but do remember, as Sasha was saying, like it's always moving, it's always changing. The crypto market never closes. It's open 24/7. That means if I go to bed at night thinking I'm doing really, really well with my cryptocurrency, I could get up in the morning and it's completely skewed the other way. So when you invest, when you spend anything on cryptocurrency, our recommendation here at Category 5 TV is to only spend what you can afford to lose. It is a gamble to get involved in cryptocurrency whatsoever.
I will say in the crypto report, my favorite is Turtlecoin, only because I love the name. I can just picture these tiny little baby turtles that just like erupted from their shells in the beachy sand.
See, that's exactly
just, like,
how it works.
Running to the ocean and they're trying so hard, and I'm like,
it's
go
exactly
little
how
guys.
It works, folks. Yeah, that's all you have to just stand by the ocean and wait.
And
to
one
travel
day
to the moon.
You'll go to the moon.
Yes, we're on our way there, folks.
Microsoft Edge is coming to Linux. News that a Linux port of the Chromium-based Edge browser is on the way isn't too much of a surprise, given that Microsoft developers have teased the possibility several times before. They've previously gone on record as saying that Edge for Linux is something that we'd like to do and something that would happen eventually. They even launched a survey to scope out feedback on the idea from existing Linux users. But now Edge for Linux is official, and Microsoft says it will be out next year. When Microsoft announced it was rebuilding its Edge browser on top of Chromium, the likelihood of a native Linux port increased substantially due to the cross-platform nature of the code base. After all, an assortment of Chromium-based web browsers already support Linux, including Google Chrome, Vivaldi, Opera, Yandex, and SRware Iron. For its part, though, Microsoft seems to be understanding how open source works. Edge has become an active contributing member to the Chromium open source project, which means work done for Edge can in turn benefit other browsers, including ones you might actually want to use.
I'm actually glad that you made that statement, because the whole time you're talking, I'm thinking,
wah, wah, wah.
Who cares?
Yeah. Wah, wah, wah.
It's like Microsoft doesn't at all understand the industry. And this is Microsoft.
Yeah.
Nobody. And I speak generally. I may be generalizing here. But nobody who is proficient enough on their computer to be a proficient Linux user wants Edge.
No.
Period.
Zero.
However, then you said that they're contributing back to open source and it may assist the Chromium project. And so I'm like, okay, that's kind of nice of them. If it's good, I want to see their commits. Mm-hmm. I want to see their PRs. I want to see what they're contributing back and whether it's actually worth our while.
Is there any chance that they would ever do something where they weren't getting more than they were giving?
Microsoft?
Yeah. Exactly.
Come on now. No, they own GitHub, so they're always going to be getting more than they're giving.
Always.
Period.
Yeah.
Period. And they have machine learning, and they have AI that can culminate the data on GitHub and pull it all into their own projects, for sure.
It's not surprising, I don't think.
I do have Windows 10 on a couple of my computers at work. I have to for certain things.
Yeah.
And I don't use Edge on those. Because it sucks.
Yeah.
And nobody should use Edge.
I don't think... Does anybody actually use Edge? Does anybody?
I think only people that I've ever encountered, Sasha, who use Edge, and you can correct me if you're a diehard Edge lover...
Please let me know.
You can correct me, but I think that the only people who use it are those who accidentally use it.
Yeah.
They look at the E and they think it's Internet Explorer because they're so novice that they don't understand.
Yeah, I feel like
anything about anything.
If I was on Edge, it would be like I was standing in a desert and I'm like,
if
hello,
she's on Edge.
Anybody out there?
If you're on your
nobody's there.
Some people might be thinking, oh, but I think I use the E, the blue E. And if you do, bring up the blue E and type in install Chrome. Yeah. And just see what happens. And it's interesting that when you do that, Edge will say, oh, but Edge is faster and Edge is better. It's like, dude, just back off, man. This is like the needy boyfriend, right? That's like, oh, I'm so much better than you. I can do better. I can, please give me another chance.
Are you sure? I felt like that Facebook did that to me when I broke up with it. Like, are you sure
please.
This face will miss you?
Oh, dear. No. Like, Chrome, Firefox. I'm not in love with Firefox right now. Mozilla's making some really bad decisions, but that is, you know, that's between me and Firefox. We'll have it out eventually. I use Chrome for the most part.
I feel like I only use Chrome always, ever, I think.
I think also the integration of Google's software, Google's services, because I've been using Google Drive a lot, Google Docs, and so that's where I do a lot of my, because I can open them just like having Word.
Yes.
On all of my computers. Doesn't matter if they're Linux, Windows, Mac, doesn't matter.
I know.
And so I love that. And it doesn't even matter if they're powerful enough, or I don't have to have software licenses. I just log in and I'm in.
I know.
So I do like Chrome for that.
I definitely love it.
Yeah. This is not a Chrome advertisement. This is an anti-Edge
Let's dial it back a little. My love for Chrome runs deep.
But understand, though. Okay, so just quickly, because I know we've got to move on.
Okay.
But Chrome, which we love, is based on Chromium.
Yes.
Edge, which we despise, is based on Chromium. They're both pulling. They're the same underlying software.
Right.
Microsoft's Edge browser is dead. Microsoft themselves have killed it and said, this sucks. Microsoft said that, not verbatim. However, they said, we're no longer going to develop it based on our own code base. We're going to base it on the same code base that Chrome uses.
Right.
We're going to, oh, our Edge is sucking so bad, we're going to make it based on Chrome. So they're actually, Edge is based on Chrome now, basically.
It's just like a Chrome Echo. You should just change the name.
Yeah. So I'm just, like, so putting that into perspective. So, yeah, they might give back, and we'll see what they give back, but I think it's all just,
it's
nobody
hullabaloo.
Wants it. Nobody wants it.
No.
Don't put it on Linux. But and that bothers me, because no Linux user wants Edge, right?
I would assume so. Correct us. Correct us. If you love Linux and also Edge, let me know.
And I will...
wonder about your...
I will pray for you.
Yeah.
No, but what bothers me about this is that I feel like this is one of those tactics by a big company that's going to say, we tried Linux. Adobe, we tried Linux, and it just... Game developers. Oh, we tried Linux.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, well, it didn't really fly. Well, so we tried Linux. We brought our Edge browser to Linux, and people didn't like it. So we're just not going to support the open source. It just feels like that. No.
Wouldn't it be crazy?
They're not stupid.
Yeah, they're not
Nobody
stupid.
Wants Edge on Linux.
Yeah.
Nobody.
So,
correct me if I'm wrong. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
So it feels like this is a tactic. They're saying, here's Edge for Linux. Here you go. Install and enjoy. Oh, nobody installed it. Oh, I guess, well, Linux is not, we're not going to support Linux. We're not going to put our investment dollars into Linux, our development time. Doesn't it feel that way?
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. It's not based on anything factual.
Other... weird if we did like a 5-year update on this story, and we're like, oh, we were wrong. Everybody
Let's look
now
back.
Loves Edge.
Everybody make it. Yeah. Robbie's like, I'm going to show you the latest features in Edge. Finally, here we are.
Our
5 years
feature.
Later, we have plugins.
Yeah.
That would
Edge.
Be wonderful.
Okay. The late James Dean is getting digitally restored for an upcoming movie, and many on the internet, including Chris Evans, aren't happy. Magic City Films has announced that, thanks to Movie Magic technology, it has cast Dean in its upcoming drama, Finding Jack. But he died in a car crash in 1955 when he was just 24 years old. Dean only appeared in 3 feature films before his death and has been cast posthumously as a secondary character in the coming Vietnam War drama. Fans of the actor weren't exactly excited about the news on social media. Zelda Williams, actor and daughter of the late Robin Williams, tweeted, quote, publicity stunt or not, this is puppeteering of the dead for their clout alone, and it sets such an awful precedent for the future of performance, end quote. The recently launched production house Magic City Films obtained the rights to use Dean's image from his family. Co-director Anton Ernst says, quote, we feel very honored that his family supports us and will take every precaution to ensure that his legacy as one of the most epic film stars to date is kept firmly intact, end quote. While Finding Jack will be live action, Dean's performance will be constructed via full body CGI using actual footage and photos. Another actor will voice him.
Unbelievable that we're there.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen deep fakes.
Yeah.
They're incredible. Mind-blowing. Now they're going to create the actor. And I know that's been done before in some ways.
Oh, yeah. We've seen performances done by major stars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but...
but this is taking somebody who created films in the 50s, bringing him back to life in color.
I am not opposed to this.
Okay.
I am not opposed to this. I like it, actually.
And you've expressed an interest in this type of technology before.
Yes. It feels a little tiny bit Black Mirror. But
yes.
But in a
good way. Has enough time passed, though? I could say...
he's 80. He's 88. Or he would have been
88 years old, yeah.
I feel like... and I might be speaking out of turn, but if I were James Dean and 88 years old, I would want to see myself.
As a youth.
As a youth.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, who wouldn't want that?
Yeah.
I think that this will be an incredible I'm assuming they'll be honoring him. If they're not going to be doing something.
That's the idea.
Right? Like, it would be different if they were, I guess, throwing him, dragging him through the mud, but.
No, the idea here is they're making his fourth movie. That's the idea. Like, that's the premise here, is that James Dean will be one of the stars, not the leading role, but a star in his fourth movie.
I am all for this because I would like for that to be able to happen for me or for you.
Sure,
like,
you could have the night off tonight.
Right, or like one day after I pass, long from now, right?
100 years from now.
Wouldn't it be so cool to be like, this is what Sasha was like to a younger generation. Like,
voiced by Gilbert Godfrey.
Exactly. And I would like to ask to also do this also for River Phoenix. And I realize you'll probably need to get his family's
Sure.
permission.
Well, that's too soon.
I don't know.
We're talking about, though, like James Dean.
James
right?
Dean.
And could we start to see, and that's a whole ethical dilemma too, right? Like, when does a human's persona become public domain? Well, is that even a thing?
Right.
But that's going to happen.
If it were Disney's, it would never happen because Disney likes to keep everything locked up forever.
But don't you think that's going to happen?
It's going to happen.
We're at the point now where so much time has passed since recorded history began.
Yes.
And I don't mean like recorded on a stone tablet. I mean recorded like video, audio. Mm-hmm. We're getting to that point where soon it's going to be 100 years on.
Right.
Then it's going to be 150 years on. In my children's generation, like we're looking 130 years on for some of these actors. And
yeah. You
know, when are we going to see those actors rebirthed and brought back? Yeah. And where is the moral compass when it comes to that?
Is it just
up to the estate to make that decision?
I suppose. I think it's up to the estate. I think once you've kind of lent yourself to film, mm-hmm. you are now part of film. Like, I feel like...
There is that.
Right?
And that's hard for us to accept. But we're seeing, I mean, when you're...
Like, I know that...
A celeb, that's...
I know Zelda was saying that she thinks that it's puppeteering of the dead, but...
Yeah.
But it's no different than splicing clips of, you know, say, Robin Williams to say something that he didn't say. But
no,
not that anybody would have done that, but that's still...
But to be fair to Zelda, I wouldn't bring back Robin Williams. Not now.
Not yet. It's fresh.
80 years from now?
Yes.
Or 50 years from now, maybe that's acceptable.
Yeah.
But not now.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it's funny that Chris Evans did voice his concern. Yeah. Thank you, Captain America.
And a lot of folks have.
But... I
saw Bette Midler tweeting. She was joking about how white male actors get jobs even if they're dead. Like, that's...
Maybe I'm just in love with the technology, but I think to myself, wouldn't Bette Midler want to do a movie with her own self, but younger? How cool would that be?
Well, and Will Smith is doing that, in a manner of speaking.
What?
He has a movie that is just that, where he's co-acting with his 20-year-old self, which
See?
Is really kind of neat.
That's kind of similar technology to this, right? In my mind.
But he's still alive, so he can give the A-OK, and he can act the second actor, and then they just de-age technology. It's a little bit of a different technology for sure, obviously.
Right. But I love it. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see how it goes.
Will you see it? Will you watch the movie? That's the and this is a question for the community. Comment below. Would you watch it? James Dean, starring in a new movie in 2020.
Would you
watch it? Or is there an ethical dilemma that prevents you from feeling right about watching and supporting that?
What would that be? There is no ethical... I know. I don't feel like there's an ethical dilemma.
I do say that a little bit. Like, I personally will probably... I'd be very interested to see it.
Uh-huh.
But there are those who are really uncool with bringing back an actor who has passed. And I can understand that. I can respect that.
I have a heart. I'm so pro the process that it's hard for me to see the flip side of it. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to see the side that's bad about bringing back to light somebody who obviously loved to entertain and mm-hmm. let them continue to do so. I don't.
Comment below. Let us know what you think.
Big thanks to Roy W. Nash and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us this week. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And if you appreciate what we do, become a patron at patreon.com/newsroom. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Rickman.
And I'm Robbie Ferguson.